and welcome back to This Is What Democracy Looks Like In, hosted by me, Mary Layton. So this is the second half of my interview with Kim and Zeno about democracy in South Korea. If you haven't already heard the first part, go back to wherever you found this podcast and dig that one out first. It will make a lot more sense. In the second half of this conversation, I asked Kim and Zeno to help me understand some recent political events in Korea that seemed, from the outside, very dramatic. These were things that I had been reading about in the news before we did this interview. So, for instance, there was a corruption scandal about the First Lady's handbag, an opposition leader going on hunger strike, a politician who was stabbed in the neck while walking in the street, and another elected official who had been attacked in the street by a teenager. While talking about these kind of events, in the interview, Kim uses the term legible political act, i.e. things that make sense in that political system. And I think this is really important for this podcast in general. So I wanted to just briefly touch on it first before we jump in. To understand what she means by this, think for instance about a politician in the US shaking the Bible during a speech or saying a prayer. In many countries, including the UK, invoking religion in this way would be unthinkable. It would be so unexpected, people would find it really bizarre. But in the US political system and culture, it makes total sense. We know what type of image they're trying to project and what they're trying to say when they invoke God and the Bible, so it's legible to us. We can read it as a kind of political act. Another example that we've discussed in earlier episodes of this podcast, particularly in terms of the UK and Chile and a little bit with Mexico as well, is the involvement of students in politics. So for example, in the Chilean episodes, we talked a lot about how it's totally normal for students to go on strike and form massive demonstrations, and other adults would join in and defend them, and that's considered totally normal. It makes sense. It's legible. It's something that would be unthinkable in the US, like students would not be taken seriously as political actors in the US democratic system in the same way. So what you're about to hear now is a discussion where my guests, Kim and Zeno, make legible for us the more unique cultural elements of the political landscape in South Korea that have otherwise been presented in the Western press as weird and kind of salacious. And I really appreciate that about this discussion from them. So yeah, here we go. Well, one of the things when I was looking at news reports about what had been happening in South Korea recently, I was kind of interested that there seemed to be quite a bit of drama. there seemed to be quite a bit of, I was noticing lots of politicians accusing each other of corruption scandals. There were a couple of instances of politicians being attacked in the streets, being stabbed by members of the public in the neck, which was rather dramatic. The opposition leader went on hunger strike at some point in September. Like, it seems there's a lot of drama going on, and I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about, you know, how these kind of acts fit into the political conversation. To go on hunger strike, for instance, seems incredibly extreme elsewhere.
I think hunger strike is not that extreme in South Korean context. I mean, it is an act. It is an act of desperation. I mean, it is portrayed as that. But it's a pretty well, it's a legible form of political protest, right. Hunger strike. There are certain genres which may not exist in other places. So hunger strike is one of them. I think it usually becomes a more serious issue when you have, you know, civilians going on hunger strike, for instance. You know, victims of certain violence, you know, they may go on hunger strike for like 100 days, 200 days. That would be, I think, a bigger sort of an issue than, say, politicians going on hunger strike in most cases. I mean, this time around, I think it did go on for a little bit longer. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of tropes around hunger strike and food.
Interesting.
Stabbing was considered as also very shocking to, I think, most Korean public. It's not something we see that often, especially when it comes to, you know, someone of that high profile. And so that was considered as, you know, it's not something that's normalized at all, I think. At least people don't expect to see that at all. So there was a lot of condemnation about how that was also treated in the media. I would say the more recent things have been, you know, the drama of what has been reported abroad is also been a drama for us as well.
Kim, the way you framed it actually was kind of what I was trying to grasp towards. It's like what is seen as what is legible to the general public as a normal political act. Like, so something like a hunger strike seeming as, okay, that makes sense. We understand as a political act. So for instance, something like student politics, right? Students protesting appears to be something that is legible and understandable. Okay, students rise up and make protests in some countries. In some countries, the military gets involved, and that is seen as a legible, normal thing that is part of the political landscape. In other places, those two things don't make sense whatsoever and would be considered so bizarre that it wouldn't be imaginable. I'm wondering, like, what kind of things are considered imaginable beyond just the act of voting, within the political landscape?
So I think there's a very little possibility that military would come again to engage in politics. Of course, there was an attempt in 2016 when the previous president Park was impeached. The military kind of planned a coup, another coup, but it was revealed prior to its happening. So it is less likely. And in case of student protest, I think it is also has little possibility because Kim might be familiar with this
Interesting.
narrative that the student movement or politics has declined in the past decades. But
Interesting,
instead,
yeah.
I think a lot of social aspects have been politicized in the past decades. So they are still under the possibility of mobilization. They do not have that kind of like legitimacy or power to correspond with the civil society or working as the engine for social change. But going back to my politicization or polarization, maybe argument, so it has been very politicized and there has huge development of hate speech in these politics and the discourse. For
Interesting.
example, going back to the hunger strike. Hunger strike is still a thing, but it's not anymore a big thing, not socially regarded as the weapon of the week. Because there have been several hate speech or actions, eating strike, like eating chickens in front of those people who are on hunger strike by the right wing
Oh,
or
wow.
the incels. It has increasingly become a kind of social practice. And I think stabbing the opposition leader or the other party is also becoming a problem and it's becoming normalized. Because in case of hitting the ruling party politician in last month, I guess, it was done by a middle schooler.
I saw that,
So it's getting mixed and like some of major politicians use hate speech as kind of mobilizing their support from the younger generations. So it's getting messy, losing decency, I guess.
If I may add to that, so in terms of student politics, I think it has been discussed that, so in the past, students were really important in making changes in Korean political sort of like arena. College students, high school students, a lot of protests, you will see them. In fact, in the you know in during the dictatorship, there has been various measures placed against college students or university campuses, having police enter those campuses and so forth to so that they wouldn't protest against the ruling party or whatnot. So that has been part of the narrative of the democratization of South Korea. That has been part of the regular narrative, but nowadays there has been, discussions around, oh, there's no such politics as much as before. And I mean, some people might say it's the COVID, some people might say the decline has been happening already because the younger generations are different or whatnot. But yeah, but it's different from the US. I mean, I think that's probably what's haunting you in that question, that in the US, students are not expected to be part of the larger sort of political decisions, or they're not considered as a major player in it. But in more conventional South Korean politics, yes, they were considered as an absolute, powerhouse of political changes. But there has been a lot of changes that's been taking place, not just in terms of student politics, but also in terms of how media operates, for instance, or what's considered as a more legible action. Like another example would be self-immolation. So that has been a very legible kind of action, political action that a civilian might take. I don't think politicians would do it, but civilian might take out of desperation. For example, the most well-known case being a laborer, Chun Tae-il, burning himself, and that's sort of like a landmark moment for Korean history of labor conditions and things like that. But in recent years, self-immolation is considered as a dumb thing to do. I actually have a neighbor who self-immolated because in protest of working condition, and everybody's tried to stop him because everybody said that's a dumb idea. Nobody would pay
Interesting.
attention because news just changes so fast. They maybe pay attention for half a day and you'll be forgotten. Sadly, he passed away, and nobody really talks about him anymore.
That's us, yeah.
So some of these actions are losing their grips. I'm not saying that everybody should go back to self-immolation or anything like that, but these more legible political acts have been shifting. I mean, the example that Zeno gave in terms of like eating strikes in opposition to hunger strike is a very new thing that came out in like about a decade ago, I would say. So that is so these kinds of actions and languages are constantly changing. It's a very dynamic society. And to bring it down to a less sort of scandalous and maybe less salacious kinds of things that politicians would do, I think it's expected that they would go around, engage with civil societies or NGOs. So you will see, I mean, there's a question of, what's considered as a truly non-governmental organization or a true civil society in some extent. Like some of the groups are a little like sketchy, I would say. But there is an expectation that, politics is not just about politicians, but they somehow have to be getting endorsement from some sort of civil society. So you will see all sorts of random organizations congregating when there is a political event. There's also religion being pulled into this whole thing in a weird
Interesting.
way. South Korea so Korea is a secular country, but there are many different religions out there, large ones like Protestants, Catholics, Buddhists, I think are probably the three major ones. But they also they're positioned as neutral, but they do get pulled into politics. So that's kind of normal part of the political ritual you would see. And military, that's a taboo. But people do suspect, are there any connections? I mean, in more recent, there has been a scandal around a death of a soldier, a conscripted soldier, and people, this part of the scandal has to do with, was the military in communication with the president? Are they, like, what is their relationship? So if you want to get a sense of, what the political sphere kind of looks like, I would say, these are some of the maybe taboos and some of the normalized practices, but it's constantly changing. That's what I would say.
That's really interesting. Thank you.
To supplement Kim's explanation, students have been regarded as the future social leaders, with the specificity of Korean society as a Confucian society. So elites in like until the 1970s, even high school students were the elites, and until 1990s or 2000, college students were elites because they were a minority. But however, in the 21st century, the enrollment ratio for higher education is changing between 60 to 80%. So college students are not no more elites in their numbers, and the socioeconomic system has changed a lot. So their security after their college education is dwindling. So it affects their participation in political movement or social discourse. So moving on to the second point. So I think there has been some change as well. So the first president from opposition party happened in 1997 from a Democrat party. And since then, there has been continuous mobilization of civil society leaders to the Democratic Party. And in the following 2 decades, there has been several scandals about of these Democratic people in terms of sexual harassment or some money bribery or something like that. So this kind of has changed the social discourse upon the left and right in mainstream media, because
Interesting,
the
yeah.
left was believed to be moral, clean, and the right was believed to be corrupt but competent. But this kind of previous understanding schema is not working well in the past years. And the third one, the mainstream media landscape in Korea is very much biased. I mean, there's no level playing field for these political parties or political work.
Interesting.
So the scandals from left or the right wing are highlighted in different way or a different scale, and it really affects the general discourse about politics.
In addition to the mainstream media, so in South Korea there are three major broadcasting companies, and there are several others. There's satellite, I not satellite, but I don't even know what they're called. There are other smaller broadcasting companies. There's major newspapers, I would say maybe five at the most. But I think what's increasingly more important is the YouTube. YouTube is really playing a large role in how people learn their news, and also how people form their opinions about certain things. So I just want to quickly remark that YouTube is really huge. Another thing, maybe this is like a fun point for America, given how the election is unfolding. So in South Korea, it's very common to have your former president prosecuted. Yeah, so I think we send most of the presidents to jail or of some sort. Not all of them, but
Interesting.
most. So it's like a ritual. It's kind of expected that like if an opposition leader comes in, they'll somehow have the prosecutor involved and somehow find faults in their deeds and will be sent to prison. So you know, in this whole Trump thing, it's been kind of exciting to watch how people have been shocked about the idea of sending your former president to prison, but I think in South Korea it's fairly taken for granted that, you know, there will be some sort of criminal investigation taking place afterwards. So it's a fairly ritualized thing. And okay, so before I forget, another thing, because I think it's very important. In South Korean politics, the role of prosecutor, the history of their role is really, really significant in understanding how South Korean politics have formed. I think it's interesting in the US that there has been a rising recognition of the role of prosecutor, and more broadly. But in South Korea, the prosecutor has the history of serving the authoritarian government for a long time. And so the current president that we have is actually from the prosecutor's office,
Interesting.
which has all sorts of baggage with it. I'm not trying to say that whatever that's, you know, the kind of accusations that's happening against Trump is, you know, wrong or anything, but I'm just saying that there is a larger role assigned and more sort of collective memory about the prosecutor's role in South Korean politics.
Sort of quickly, I want to think about, and we're getting close to the end now. In terms of this whole idea of every president you have, you then sent to prison for corruption, is it seen those kind of corruption scandals? And I saw the expression dictatorship by prosecution come up in some of the things I was reading, but this idea that every politician is accused of corruption, everyone is being prosecuted through the courts by their rivals the whole time. Is that seen as real? Or is it seen as part of, like, oh, of course you just attack your opposition? Is there the sense that every politician is corrupt in reality and therefore untrustworthy? Or is it seen as just a political gesture? Like, do
Let
people
me
just.
take a stab at it. I think it can go both ways. I think there is a wide recognition that somehow politicians have their dirty hands somehow. I think that's fairly widely accepted. But when it comes to actual prosecution, I think it depends on who you align with or what whose views you share with. But yes, I think people will. I think, for example, I'm thinking of prosecuting the impeached President Park or prosecuting President Lee, who was before then a president, for corruption. I think those are real charges that need to be placed. And to some extent, there is a whole thing of, voting for justice. There's a whole idea of voting for justice in which you suspect your current president being corrupt and problematic, then you would vote for the oppositional leader so that that person could be prosecuted. So there is that kind of logic also at work. But at the same time, I do think that in certain cases, they can be unnecessarily nitpicky about prosecuting. So it's usually considered as a punishment against your opposition so that they wouldn't grow in power again. Because, if they take charge in office, you'll get prosecuted. And I in fact, actually, the pres we did have a president who committed suicide. Or, I mean, it's seen as committed suicide. I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy theory around that. President Roh Noo-Moo-hyun. And that usually blame is upon the prosecutor's office for exceedingly conducting the investigation to to way too much. I mean, it depends who you ask. Some people might say, oh no, he had good reason to commit suicide because he was corrupt. But then other people, I think most people who lived through the era would probably say, well, the prosecutor office, who was obviously in the service of the new government, was just doing it too much, try to find faults. So I think it can go in different ways, and it really depends on who you ask, but
Well, the final thing I really wanted to think about is, part of what you were saying, Kim, about NGOs and so on. Given all of this, is there a sense that, I mean, we can talk about elections and the drama and the salaciousness, but is there a sense that the way that the system works leads to a society that actually functions? Like, is there a sense that if you, as a normal citizen, had some problems, you had a complaint, had something that you really cared about, there was somebody you could go to. There was a representative who would take your issues seriously. That ultimately, it's not all cynical. There is a genuine and rational plan for improving society in terms of like social services, health, infrastructure. That all of this drama of electing people, of political parties, and so on, does lead to ministries and departments that represent the people and create public services and keep society functioning.
I'm quite skeptical about the working system or the prospect of the health of the overall society and system. So I wouldn't say long about this, but it is really problematic. And I think the state capacity inheriting from the previous state model worked, but I'm not sure whether it can sustain its capacity in the future.
Interesting.
I don't have a good answer to that either. I think most people are pretty skeptical about the current system in one way or another. And in fact, the future of South Korea as a nation state, there's a lot of conversation about declining birth rate. And if the population structure changes, if the size changes, will any of the current system working, not just the election, not just in terms of who's voting for whom, but also like all the national pension system or the national healthcare system, all these big things are right now in question. There's also increasing discussion around immigration policy because South Korea is traditionally not a society that used to take a lot of immigrants or anything like that, but it's been changing a lot. And I think people are being tired and disappointed about the overall how the politics have been dealing with this issues that seem so large and also very urgent. Having said that, I do think that there are genuine efforts to make changes. And it's important, I think, to also not replicate the narrative of exhaustion in hatred to toward politics in general. Although I think it takes a lot of conscious effort. I mean, I do think that, I do wonder. I have friends who are journalists, and I do wonder, how are they even keeping themselves up when they just, have to report about all this really abysmal kind of stories. Really, it's just like mentally tiring. I think also, politics is a part of a more everyday conversation in South Korea. I don't know so
Interesting.
much about the US. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Depends where you are at. But so I think it's a difficult moment in general. Also, a lot of uncertainty, not just in terms of within South Korea, but also in the region as well. I mean, who gets elected in the US will definitely shape also how South Korean politics operate, you need to be fair with.
That's
So
horrifying.
I'll put it at there.
It's easy to be cynical in many ways, but it's almost like it's necessary to fight against that cynicism in order to try and remember that we have to believe in these institutions in order to not abandon them and to keep believing that it's possible to have good things like infrastructure, schools, health, and that somebody has to represent those and make them function.
If I just may add one more thing, generation politics is a huge part of South Korean politics. I mean, I think we see that coming up and coming in the US with, oh, both of these candidates are super old, Trump and Biden. Similar conversations, I think, have been happening in South Korea with, a lot of politicians aging, and what do we make out of older population, the segment who's also getting larger because South Korea is an aging society. So, there's also the question of, what do we make out of the younger people, who seem disconnected, from the recent past, or also maybe they might, right now not the case, but maybe in the future they might just be smaller in number. So there's all that questions around also future generation as well, and what even South Korean society might look like, that those questions are all at stake.
Interesting.
When I mentioned YouTube earlier, so in addition to YouTube, there are various internet forums that are siloed within themselves that are very important in Korean politics. So they would be like Reddits, but you imagine there are multiple Reddits.
Right.
And
Interesting.
then within each of this Reddit forum, which is not really, but kind of, you would have different age groups, different, people, different profiles gathering and exchanging whatever they have about the current world. And they are immensely important in informing how people form their opinions, in my that's how I see it. So in addition to YouTube, there's another important sort of platform through which people form their opinion. That's one thing. Another thing that didn't come up, but I think is extremely important in Korean politics, is gender, the question of gender. You don't see it as much, I think, in the US. I think there is a rising recognition that in the US context about the vigilantes, the sort of the very macho kind of figures. There's all this discussion about what do you call incels or something like that. I see that up on the horizon, but in South Korea, gender is a major part of all the political discussions and divisions and
Interesting.
whatnot, and that's why I also had to identify myself as female in the earlier. It's not, this is not about like the mo this is really about anti-feminism in general, that's really currently holding on to a lot of politicians. So the current polit current president, in fact, have targeted young male as he tried to capture the young male voters in his
Interesting.
election campaign, and there was a huge success. The current coalition that Zeno brought up, one of the younger person there was also, he's known for doing specifically that. So when I talk to some of my friends who are female, we do feel that, these politicians are treating females as just a just a number. It's not a real consideration. Even the progressive party is often the case. And especially I think for people who are even younger than me, who are maybe in their early 20s, mid-20s, those people will probably even have more, I wouldn't say militant, but probably even more
Vocal.
earlier, ideas about feminism or about the gender kind of thing in the earlier years. So it's a divide, it's a huge divide. That's just there's a lot of conversation about the femicides, or there's a lot of conversation about, how even the birth rate conversation, declining population, is all about, who are to blame with, there. I mean, it's fairly well known that, female who work, it's very hard for them to work and then give birth and then go back to their workplaces. But then there's also the sort of the more older generation politicians, or some of the right-wing people, who would be saying something like, "Oh, females should also just be working as housewives," right?
Exactly,
So these kinds of tropes are being brought out in even more dominant discourses. So gender, I want to emphasize that gender is an essential part of understanding Korean politics. I'm doing such a bad job in paraphrasing this,
No, it's
but
great.
it's important to also acknowledge that there is a conscription that's only for male, and that is an important aspect in which these gendered discussions are being informed and shaped. I will leave it at that, because I have not been conscripted, so I don't, some people might be unhappy of that I brought it up, but
Well,
just saying that,
how long is conscription?
it's been changing over the time. When my friends were conscripted, it was usually around, I would say, 2 years plus minus, depending on, whether you fall in, Air Force, Navy, or Army. Also, if you are conscripted for civil services, it's probably longer. It has there over the time, the whole time has been shortened a little bit. But it's still a long enough time for people to feel at loss, like, oh, I might, my precious young, like a year and or two in my early 20s are being taken away by the National Conscription Service.
Is it a conscription that everybody in reality does have to do? Because I know in some countries there are ways that people of
Dino
financial
should answer
means
this. It's not the right
Well,
word.
yeah. So these days, conscription is about 1.5 years for Army, and for Navy and the Air Force, it's a little bit longer. And basically, it's required for every male, except for a few. And the boundary for conscription is getting larger, especially in the recent years, because of the low birth rate the past decades. And as Kim mentioned, there's a new group of young politicians who use anti-feminist hate speech to mobilize the young males. And the gender is really, really becoming a huge issue in Korea. But the current politicians, most of them do not pay attention to it because they know nothing.
Well, I'm thinking it sounds
I
like,
wouldn't
oh,
agree. I
go
mean,
ahead.
I wouldn't say they don't pay attention to it. I think they actually capitalize on it. I think they know very well that gender is the big agenda. I think they are pretty well aware of where the conversations are heading, but I think they're capitalizing on their own behalf. Like, it's not about that. It's not, I don't think it's coming from ignorance. I think it's actually coming from bad faith, to be honest with.
Well, it does seem like it's this trifecta of intergenerational conflict, gender, and rise of hate speech that there seems to be a connection between those three.
Very, very much.
Awesome. Well, the final question I always ask everybody is, what does democracy mean to you? Do you think that you live in a democracy?
Well, to be frank, frankly speaking, democracy has been culturally understood as a manifestation of liberalism in my life. I think, in terms of that understanding, it has been over overall liberal, but not in its perfect state. So I think it still has to change more, or it has to become more perfect. And that might be the responsibility of people who are making this podcast and who are listening to this podcast, I guess.
That's a good answer. I like that.
I don't know what democracy is to me. I mean, this is a bad answer.
No, it's
But
fine. It's an honest answer. I like it. I like it.
I do think that it matters. It's nice to see some dynamism. Even though, some politics I just don't agree. And sometimes you do see political leaders or politicians who seem to have like lost visions and just trying to like grab power or any what whatsoever. But it's kind of nice to see that, there are people who are still kind of fighting over different agendas rather than just, submitting to it or giving up on it.
Absolutely. Even if we don't agree with, is this kind of where we're going? Even if we don't agree with people that, like, if we all agreed, it wouldn't be a democracy.
I mean, I'm not putting in that optimistic view, but I'm just
Right.
saying I just like the way that there's still the dynamism. I would be more concerned if there's no dynamism in the sense that people are there's still a lot of dynamism in terms of like, what should South Korean society look like. There's a lot of conversation around it one way or another. It's very divisive. Sometimes it's very hurtful because a lot of hate speech and all that. But I think it's still good that there are certain those kinds of conversations taking place, though I would rather see it not evolving into more violent politics. But
Absolutely.
I'm just saying that it's better than just going for, say, stability. So basically,
Exactly.
so I don't know. I feel very conflicted about this. I am sorry. I don't have a good way of like
That is a
actually saying what
wonderful
it
way of
means.
saying it, because it is complicated, right? And I think that's the whole point, right? There is no simple answer, because on paper, in a slogan, it looks really simple. But when you actually put it on the ground, this is the whole point. It is really complicated. It's really hard to pin it down. Like, we want difference of opinion, but we don't want a hate speech, right? We
Okay, so
want.
here is a way to tackle it. So, as someone who's introverted and who's just tired of life, I'm impressed that there are so many people who are out there trying to do something in the politics. And I appreciate that.
Yes, awesome. I like it. I like it. Thank you for listening. Okay, if you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe, share, or even support us by going to the website www.democracyinpodcast.com. There you can find more information about the topics discussed today, as well as updates on what's coming next. Look out for the next episode. We are hoping it will be coming out very soon, and it will hopefully be on the Philippines.